a drama guide giving important factual and background material to each of the 28 great plays of this series, is available as a listener's aid at the cost price of 25 cents. Coin or money order to be sent in care of Great Plays, Columbia University Press, New York City. Today's great play is Strife by the English dramatist John Galsworthy. This great depiction of the struggle between capital and labor is as dramatic now as it was when first presented in London, March 1909. The vivid events of this tragedy of human conflict are related with complete objectivity. In this play, right and wrong, tragedy and irony seem to be on both sides.
A few weeks before the action of the play begins, David Roberts, the workers' representative and leader of the strikers at the Penarthur Tin Plate Works in Wales, had gone to London to present the men's case before the board of directors. The meeting had been a failure, and Roberts had returned, bitter and defeated. The striking Welshman requested that the directors should come to Wales and meet the men's committee at the house of the works manager, Mr. Francis Underwood. In the manager's dining room, a bright fire is burning. A long dining table is set out as a board table. At the head of it sits John Anthony, the chairman of the board, an old man with thick white hair and dark eyebrows. On his right sits his son, Edgar. Next to him, Wanklyn, bending over transfer papers. Tench, the secretary, stands helping him. On Wanklyn's right sits Underwood, the manager. Back to the fire is Scantlebury, a very large, pale, sleepy man with grey hair, rather bald. Standing in front of the fire is Wilder, who speaks.
I say this fire's the devil. Can I have a screen, Tench?
Certainly, Mr. Wilder. Perhaps Mr. Underwood.
A screen? Oh, rather, I'm sorry. Rather accustomed to complaints of too much fire down here just now.
You mean the men? Poor devils. It's their own fault, Scantlebury.
There's great distress among them, according to the Trinatha News.
Oh, that rag.
Listen to this. If the board of worthy gentlemen who control the Trinatha Tinplate Works from their armchairs in London would condescend to come and see for themselves the conditions prevailing amongst their workpeople during this strike.
Well, we have come.
We cannot believe that even their leg of mutton hearts would remain untouched.
Ruffian. I remember that fellow when he hadn't a penny to his name. Little snivel of a chap that's made his way by blackguarding everybody who takes a different view to himself. What does your father say?
He says the kettle and the pot.
I shall boil if I don't get that screen.
Underwood and Ead enter with a screen which they place before the fire. Enid is tall. She has a small, decided face.
Will that do, Mr. Wilder?
Thanks, capitally.
Is there anything else you want, Father?
What about lunch, Enid?
Oh, we're going to have lunch in the drawing room, so you needn't hurry with your meeting.
Right.
Lunch. That hotel, dreadful. Did you try the white bait last night? Fried fat.
Past 12. Aren't you going to read the minutes, Tent?
At a board meeting held the 31st of January at the company's office, 512 Cannon Street, E.C., present. Mr. Anthony in the chair, Mrs. F.H. Wilder, William Scantlebury, Oliver Wanklyn, and Edgar Anthony. Red letters from the manager, dated January the 20th, 23rd, 25th, 28th, relative to the strike at the company's works. Red letter from Mr. Simon Harness of the Central Union, asking for an interview with the board. Red letter from the men's committee, signed David Roberts, James Green, John Bulgin, Henry Thomas, George Rouse, desiring conference with the board. And it was resolved that a special board meeting be called for February the 7th at the house of the manager for the purpose of discussing the situation with Mr. Simon Harness and the men's committee on the spot.
What's the union's game, Tench? What does Harness want this interview for?
Hoping we shall come to a compromise, I think, sir.
Harness. He's one of those cold-blooded, cool-headed chaps. I distrust them. What time will the men be here?
Any time now.
Well, if we're not ready, they'll have to wait. Won't do them any harm to cool their heels a bit.
Poor devils. It's snowing. That weather.
Well, I hope we're going to settle this business in time for me to catch the 6:30. I've got to take my wife to Spain tomorrow.
Gentlemen, we are here to consider the policy of the board in relation to the strike.
It's this infernal three-cornered duel. The union, the men, and ourselves.
We
union were going to withdraw their support from the men as they've done, why did they ever allow them to strike at all? What's behind it?
Fear of strikes at Harvard and Tinwell.
The men must have seen they had no chance when the union gave them up.
It's madness.
It's Roberts.
It's just our luck. Men finding a fanatical firebrand like Roberts for a leader. You don't suppose the men were going to stick out like this? Nobody suggested that.
I've never liked a fight. Never shall.
No surrender.
Who wants to surrender? I want to act reasonably. When the men sent Roberts up to the board in December, then was the time.
No compromise.
Well, there we are. This fight's been going on now since October. As far as I can see, it may last another 6 months. Pretty mess we shall be in by then. What about tin? Price going up daily.
What do you say to that, Chairman?
Can't be helped.
Can't pay a dividend till goodness knows when. And I don't want to go without a dividend for years if the Chairman does.
I think we ought to consider the men. All this suffering, it's cruel.
We didn't seek the quarrel.
I know that, sir, but surely we've gone far enough.
No. Our luxury's apart, Chairman. We must look out for what we're doing.
Give way to the men once and there'll be no end to it.
The Chairman's a stoic. Always said the Chairman was a stoic.
Much good that'll do us.
Seriously, Chairman, are you going to let the ship sink under you for the sake of a principle?
He won't sink.
Not while I'm on the board, I hope.
Better rat Canterbury.
What a man.
I've always fought them. I've never been beaten yet.
We're with you in theory, Chairman, but we're not all made of cast iron.
We only to hold on.
And go to the devil as fast as we can.
Better go to the devil than give in.
We can't go on ruining ourselves over this strike.
No caving in.
Look at it.
Well, all I can see is if that's the chairman's view, I don't know what we've come down here for.
Tell the men we've got nothing for them.
Shouldn't be a bit surprised if that brute Robert hadn't got us down here with the very same idea. I hate a man with a grievance.
We didn't pay him enough for his discovery.
We paid him $500 and a bonus of $200 3 years later.
The company made $100,000 out of his brains and paid him $700. That's the way he goes on, sir.
The man's a rank agitator. I hate unions. Now we've got Harness here. Let's get him to settle the whole thing.
No, Roberts won't let the men assent to that.
Fanatic.
And not the only one.
Mr. Harness, from the union waiting, Mr. Anthony. The men are here, too, sir.
Anthony nods. Underwood goes to the door, returning with Harness, a pale, clean-shaven man with hollow cheeks, quick eyes, and lantern jaw.
Sit there next to Chairman Harness, won't you?
Oh, thanks. Well, gentlemen, we're going to do business at last, I hope.
Harness, why don't you make the men come in?
The men are far more in the right than you are. The question with us is whether we shan't begin to support them again.
Support them if you like. We'll put in free labor. And have done with it.
That won't do, Mr. Anthony. You can't get free labor and you know it.
We shall see that.
I'm quite frank with you. We were forced to withhold our support from your men because some of their demands are in excess of current rates. I expect to make them withdraw those demands today. If they do, take it straight from me, gentlemen. We shall back them again at once.
If the men will come in, we'll do something for them.
Is that your opinion, too, Mr. Wilder?
It is.
And yours, Mr. Wanklin?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all I can say is it's a kind of high and mighty aristocratic tone I thought we'd grown out of. Seems I was mistaken.
The tone the men use?
Am I to understand, then, gentlemen, that your board is going to make no concessions?
None.
We're sorry for the state of the men.
The men have no use for your pity, sir. What they want is justice.
Then let them be just.
Well, that word just read humble, Mr. Anthony. Why should they be humble? Barring the accident of money, aren't they as good men as you?
Can't.
Well, I've been 5 years in America. It colors a man's notions.
Let's have the men in and hear what they've got to say.
As I'm to have an interview with them this afternoon, gentlemen, I'll ask you to postpone your final decision till that's over.
Underwood comes in again, followed by Roberts, Green, Bulging, Thomas, and Rouse. Roberts is lean, of middle height, with a slight stoop, high cheekbones, hollow cheeks, small, fiery eyes. He stands near the chairman.
There are some chairs there against the wall, Roberts. I want you to draw them up and sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Underwood, but we'll stand in the presence of the board.
What do the men want?
I beg your pardon. I don't quite catch the chairman's remark.
The chairman wishes to know what the men have to say.
That's what the board has to say that we've come to hear.
The board has nothing to say.
Well, in that case, they're wasting the director's time.
The chairman means, Roberts, that it was the men who asked for the conference. The board wish to hear what they have to say.
If I was begin to tell you all they have to say, I wouldn't be finished today.
What's your proposition, man? Be reasonable.
You want reason, Mr. Harness? Take a look round this afternoon before the meeting. You'll see some very pretty scenery.
All right, my friend. You won't put me off.
Oh, we shan't put Mr. Harness off. Have some champagne with your lunch, Mr. Harness. You may need it.
Ah, come on. Get to business, man.
What we're asking, look, you, is just simple justice.
Justice from London? What are you talking about, Henry Thomas? We know very well what we are. Discontented dogs, never satisfied. What did the chairman tell me up in London? That I was a foolish, uneducated man that knew nothing of the wants of the men I spoke for.
There can only be one master,
then,
Robert.
Then, by damn, it will be us.
There is a silence. Anthony and Robert stare at one another.
If you've nothing to say to the directors, Robert, perhaps you'll let Green or Thomas speak for the men.
If I've been listened to, gentlemen...
What I've got to say is... What
you
we've
speak
all got
for
to
yourself,
say.
Henry Thomas.
Let the poor men call their souls their own.
They shall keep their souls, for it's not much body that you've left them, Mr. Scantlebury. Well, will you speak, men, or shall I speak for you?
Speak out, Roberts, or leave it to others.
Thank you, George Ross. The chairman of the board of directors has honored us by leaving London and coming all this way to hear what we've got to say. It would not be polite to keep them waiting any longer.
Well, thank God for that.
Tend to me, Roberts. You are here to speak for the men, as I am here to speak for the board. What have you to say for the men?
I have this to say. You can't squeeze them anymore. Every man of us is well nigh starving. You needn't think that by waiting you'll drive us to come in. We'll die first, the whole lot of us. The men have sent for you to know once and for all whether you are going to grant them their demands. Oh, I see the sheet of paper in the secretary's hand. That is, I think, Mr. Tench?
Yes.
There's not one sentence of writing on that paper that we can do without.
No.
I said up in London, Mr. Anthony, I see again now. There is not anything on that piece of paper that a just man should not ask and a just man give.
There is not one single demand on this paper that we will grant.
Do you mean that?
I do.
You best know whether the condition of the company is any better than the condition of the men. You think because the union is not supporting us, more shame to it, that we'll be coming on our knees to you one fine morning. You think that...
It would be better if you did not speculate so much on what we think.
It's not much profit to us. But I will say this for you, Mr. Anthony. You know your own mind. I can reckon on you.
I am obliged to you.
And I know mine, and I advise you, Mr. Anthony, to prepare yourself for the worst that can happen to your company. Your position is not all that it might be. Not exactly.
Be good enough to allow us to judge of our position for ourselves.
Go back and reconsider your own.
Mr. Anthony, you are not a young man now. From the time I remember anything, you have been an enemy to every man that has ever come into your works. I don't say that you're a mean man or a cruel man, but you grudge them the say of any word on their own fate. You fought them down four times. Well, I've heard you say you love a fight. Mark my words, you're fighting the last fight you'll ever fight.
Roberts,
I mustn't speak my mind to the chairman, but the chairman may speak his mind to me.
Go on, Roberts, say what you like.
I have no more to say.
The meeting stands adjourned till 5 o'clock.
We shall never settle anything like this.
We thank the chairman of the board of directors for this gracious hearing. Good day, gentlemen.
I congratulate you on the conciliatory spirit that's been displayed. With your permission, gentlemen, I'll be with you again at 5:30. Good morning.
Lunch is ready.
Coming to lunch, Scantlebury.
I suppose so. About the only thing we can do.
Yes,
I do hope it's settled, Father.
No?
Frank says they all want to come to a compromise, really. Except that man, Robert.
I don't.
But it's such a horrid position for us. If you were the wife of the manager and lived down here and saw it all, well, you can't realize, Dad.
Indeed.
You remember my maid, Annie, who married Robert. Her heart is weak, you know. Well, since the strike began, she hasn't even been getting proper food.
Give her what she wants, poor woman.
Roberts won't let her take anything from us.
I can't be answerable for the men's obstinacy.
But they're all suffering. Father, do stop it. For my sake, it's so...
Well?
So unnecessary.
What do you know about necessity?
I live down here and see it. You don't know the state the men are in.
I know it well enough.
Don't really, Father. If you did, you wouldn't...
It's you who don't know the simple facts of the position. What sort of mercy do you suppose you'd get if no one stood between you and the continual demands of labor?
I don't believe in barriers between classes.
You don't believe in barriers between the classes?
And I don't know what that has to do with this question.
It will take a generation or two for you to understand.
It's only you and Robert's, Father, and you know it. It will ruin the company.
Allow me to be the judge of that.
I won't stand by and let poor Annie Roberts suffer like this. Father, I warn you.
What do you propose to do?
That's my affair. Oh, Father, dear. You know you shouldn't have this strain on you. You might think of us.
I am.
It'll break you down.
My dear, I'm not going to funk. On that, you may rely.
I beg pardon, madam. I think I'd rather see these papers were disposed of before I get my lunch.
Very well, Mr. Kent.
Would you sign these for me, please, sir? I owe my position to you, sir.
Well?
I know the company means a great deal to you, sir.
It does. I founded it.
Yes, sir. If the strike goes on, it'll be very serious. I don't think the directors like it, sir.
Are you, it seems.
No, sir. Of course, I've got my children and my wife is delicate. But it wasn't about that I was going to speak, sir, if you'll excuse me.
Out with it, then.
I don't like to say it, sir.
You must.
I think the directors are going to throw you over, sir.
Ring the bell.
Excuse me for saying such a thing. I was only thinking of you, sir.
Yes, sir?
Bring me a whiskey and soda.
Anything to eat, sir?
No.
If you could see your way, sir, it would be a great relief to my mind. It would indeed.
Anthony looks at his face, then slowly shakes his head.
No, sir. Your whiskey and soda, sir. You're aware, sir, of what the doctor said, sir.
I am.
This strike, sir. Excuse me, sir, is it worth it, sir? Very good, sir.
He turns and goes out into the hall. Tench makes two attempts to speak, but meeting his chairman's gaze, he drops his eyes, and turning dismally, he too goes out. Anthony is left alone. He grips the glass, tilts it, and it drinks deeply. Then sets it down with a deep and rumbling sigh and leans back in his chair. It's 3:30. In the kitchen of Robert's cottage, a meager little fire is burning. There is a kettle on the fire. Close to the fireplace, in an old armchair wrapped in a rug, sits Mrs. Roberts. By the fire, too, is Mrs. Yale. Sitting near the table is Mrs. Rouse, an old lady, ashen white, with silver hair. By the door is Mrs. Bosin. In a chair with her elbows resting on the table, sits Madge Thomas, a good-looking girl.
There ain't much eat to this fire. Come and warm yourself, Mrs. Rouse. You're looking as white as the snow, you are.
Aye, but the winter my old man was took was the proper winter. 79, that was. Well, none of you was hardly born. Not Madge Thomas, nor Sue Bulging. Any Roberts. How old were you, dear?
7, Mrs. Rouse.
7. Well, there. The company hadn't been started 3 years. Father was working on the acid. That's how he got his poisoned leg. I kept saying to him, Father, you've got a poisoned leg. Well, he says, Mother, poison or no poison, I can't afford to go laying up. And 2 days after he was on his back and never got up again, it was Providence.
You hadn't no strike that winter. This winter's hard enough for me. It wouldn't seem natural to have a dinner, would it, Mrs. Bulgin?
We've had only bread and tea last 4 days.
I send Yeo out on the ice to put on the gentry's skates and pick up what he can. Stops him from brooding about the house.
Leaving out the men, it's bad enough with the children. I keep them in bed now. They don't get so hungry when they're not running around.
You're lucky they're all so small. It's the going to school that makes them hungry. Don't Bulgin give you anything?
Would if he could, I suppose.
Hey, what? Haven't he got no shares in the company?
Well, goodbye, Annie Roberts. I'm going along home. I'll just go and get to bed. It's warmer there than anywhere.
Come on, Mother. Take my arm. We're all going the same way.
Thank you, dearies.
Oh, well, we'll go along.
There, Annie, you see that? I told George Ralph, don't think to have my company till you've made an end of all this trouble. Well, Maggie says I can't go back on Roberts. Well, if Ralph wants me, he must give up Roberts. If he gave him up, they all would.
You won't beat Roberts.
Oh, won't I? Cowards. When their own mothers and their own children don't know where to turn.
Madge.
I wonder if he can look you in the face. Harness is here again. They'll have to make up their minds today.
May I come in, Annie?
Yes, please.
Give Mrs. Underwood a chair, Madge.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, Annie, are you any better?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Oh, why did you send back the jelly?
Thank you, ma'am. I'd no need for it.
It was Robert's doing, wasn't it? How can he let you all go on suffering like this amongst you?
Who said there was suffering?
Madge.
We don't want you coming here and spying on us.
I didn't speak to you.
Well, keep your kind feelings to yourself.
This is not your house.
No, it is not my house. Keep clear of my house, Mrs. Underwood.
Oh, please to forgive Madge Thomas, Mum. She's a bit upset today.
It's all right. Is Robert out, Annie?
Yes, Mum.
It's his doing if they don't come to an agreement.
No, isn't it, Annie?
They do say your father, Mum.
I know. It's really his fault as well as Robert's. Look here, Annie. What can I do? I do so want to know. You haven't even got coals.
If you please, Mum, to put the kettle on again.
Roberts won't have long for his tea when he comes in. He's got to meet the men at 4.
That means he'll lash them into a fury again.
Can't you stop his going, Annie? Does he know how ill you are?
It's only my week off, Mum.
Roberts is always good to me.
But you ought to have everything you need. And you have nothing.
I do feel for the men dreadfully. But you know they've gone too far.
They say there's no other way to get better wages, Mum. Robert says a working man's life is all a gamble. From the time he's born to the time he dies. He says, Mum, that when a working man's baby's born, it's a toss-up from breath to breath, whether it ever draws another, and so on all his life. That's why he wouldn't have no children, even though I wanted them here.
Yes, Annie, I know.
No, you don't, Mum. You've got your children, and you'll never need to trouble for them.
You really shouldn't be talking so much, Annie. But Robert ought to think of you. It's all terrible. Oh, the kettle's boiling. Shall I make the tea? Won't you have a cup?
No, thank you, Mum. I'd sooner you didn't see Robert's, Mum. He gets so wild.
Oh, but I must, Annie.
It's life and death to him, Mum.
Well, I'll get him to talk to me outside, and we won't excite you.
Oh, I beg your pardon for coming in. You're engaged with a lady, I see. The daughter of our chairman.
Mr. Roberts, I know you've another meeting of the men. I came to appeal to you. Please, please give way a little, if it's only for your own sake.
Oh, the daughter of Mr. Anthony begs me to give way a little, if it's only for our own sakes.
For everybody's sake, then. For your wife's sake.
For my wife's sake, for everybody's sake. For the sake of Mr. Anthony.
Why are you so bitter against my father? He's an old man, and you...
If I saw Mr. Anthony going to die and I could save him by lifting my hand, I would not lift the little finger of it.
You don't really mean what you say.
I mean every word of it.
But why?
Mr. Anthony stands for tyranny. That's why.
Oh, nonsense.
Oh, Annie.
Please do not touch my wife.
Oh, I believe you're mad.
The house of a madman, then, is not the fit place for a lady.
I suppose you think it brave, then, to go on with the struggle.
Does Mr. Anthony think it brave to fight against women and children?
My father is acting on his principles.
And so am I.
At any rate, you might have pity on your wife.
Madam, I have no more to say.
Mr. Roberts, I make one more appeal to you. For the sake of your wife.
If I might advise you, ma'am, make it for the sake of your husband and your father.
Oh.
Well, how goes it, my girl? Are you feeling better? Oh, it is 10 minutes to four. Yes, I've seen their faces. There's no fight in any of them, except for that one old robber.
Won't you stop and eat, baby?
Oh, I can't swallow till those old sharks are out of the town. I shall have a bother with the men. There's no heart in them, the cowards.
It's the women, David.
Aye, so they say. There was no holding them at the start. But now the pinch has come.
How can you expect it, David?
Expect it? Wouldn't I expect what I would do myself? What one man can do, another can do.
And the women?
This is not women's work.
No. The women may die for all you care. That's their work.
Who talks of dying? No one will die till we have beaten these. This is what I've been waiting for all these months. To get the old robbers down here and send them home again without a farthing's worth of change. I've seen their faces, I tell you. I've seen their faces in the valley of the shadow of defeat.
Here, take your overcoat, David. It must be bitter
cold. You keep it and wrap it round you and stay quiet and warm. I won't be long, my girl. I'm just going to the meeting. Oh, hello, boy.
Well, John.
Father's coming. Mr. March is coming.
Very good day to you, ma'am. It is better that you are.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas.
Robert's in.
Just gone on to the meeting, Mr. Thomas.
I came to tell him that we must make terms, Miss London.
He'll never give in, Mr. Thomas.
Look, there is hardly any man for supporting him now but the engineers and George Routh.
I don't know what will come to Roberts if you give in.
It is no disgrace whatever. All that a mortal man could do, he has done. It is against human nature he has gone. But Chapel has spoken, and he must not go against her. Don't make that squeaking. Here is my daughter Madge come to sit with you. A very good day, ma'am.
You'll be late, Father, they're beginning. For the love of God, stand up to Robert, Father, this time.
Leave me to do what is proper, girl.
Madge. I'm going to the meeting. Do you hear me?
I hear you, George Routh. Go and kill your own mother if you must.
I swore to stand by Roberts. I swore that. You want me to go back on what I've sworn?
Oh, you're a pretty lover.
Madge.
I've heard that lovers do what the girls ask them. But that's not true, it seems.
You'd make a blackleg of me.
Do it for me.
Come, I can't.
Do it for me.
Don't play the wanton with me.
I would be that for the children's sake.
Madge, oh, Madge.
But you can't break your word with me.
Then, by God, I can't.
I've done for Robert.
Done for my man?
Fire is cold as stone. Now you want a drop of brandy.
Jan, run to the Lion and say, I sent you for Mrs. Roberts.
No, no. I'll just be quiet, Madge.
Ah, oh, you little rascal.
Now hold your piping. Uh-oh, the fire's going out.
Now, hush you.
No, let him play, Madge. Waiting and waiting. Oh, I've no patience with it. Waiting and waiting, that's what a woman has to do.
It is past four. In the grey failing light, an open muddy space is crowded with workmen. In the distance, snow-covered hills. In an angle formed by two walls, there is a rude platform made of barrels and boards. On it, harness is standing. Roberts, a little apart from the crowd, is leaning against one of the walls.
Well, I've spoken to you straight. If I speak till tomorrow, I can't say more.
Can they get back to it?
Alan,
they can't get them. Now, men, be reasonable. Cut your demands to the right pattern, and we'll see you through. Refuse, and don't expect me to waste my time coming down here again. If you're the sound men I take you for, you'll make up your minds to come in and trust to us to get your terms. Stand by us, and we will stand by you.
Now, you're going to be very careful. You say the punishment paid enough?
I did not say they were paid enough. I said they were paid as much as the furnace men in similar works elsewhere.
Will you support us in double pay, overtime, Saturdays?
Yes, we will.
Well,
I've said my say. Figure it out, my lads. When you want me, you know where I shall be.
If he passes through them,
he wants you to turn blacklegs. That's what he wants. He wants you to go back on us. So then turn blackleg against staff. I vote
about the women.
They can stand what we can stand, I suppose, can't they?
You have no wife.
I do not want one.
We must the bold to come to terms with London, lad. Go up on the platform if you got anything to say. Go up and say it.
We are all in the depth together, and it is nature that has put us there.
It's London put us there.
It's the Union.
It is not London. Nor it is not the Union. It is nature. It is no disgrace whatever to a party to give in to nature. For this nature is a very big thing. This nature must be humored. It is a man's business to be pure, honest, just, and merciful. That's what Chappell tells you. And look you, David Roberts. Chappell tells you can do that without going against nature.
What about the Union?
I don't trust the Union. They have treated us like dirt. Let them alone for rogues. And act for ourselves?
No Union!
No Union! Blacklegs!
I am an old man, look you.
Old fool, no Union.
Chappell says don't carry on this strife. Put an end to it.
That's a lie! Chappell says go on!
You cannot be right if I am. You cannot have it both ways.
Chappell can, though.
And so I say to all of you, if you go against Chappell, I will not be with you. Nor will any other God-fearing man.
He gets down and George Rouse steps forward and jumps onto the platform.
Mitch, what I say is drove from me. Can a man sit and see his mother starve? Can he now?
Rouse!
Simon has said fair. I've changed my mind.
Mind your coat, you mean?
Hello, what's turned him round?
He said fair. Stand by us, he said, and we'll stand by you. That's where we've been making our mistake, lads. And who's to blame for it? That man there, David Roberts. No, he said. Fight the robbers, he said. Squeeze the breath out of them. But it's not the breath out of them that's being squeezed. It's the breath out of us and ours, and that's the book of truth. Roberts will speak to you again. It's hellfire that's on that man's tongue. Sim Arnes is right. Sim Arnes knows what he's talking about. Give us power to come to terms with London. And I've done with this black misery.
Robert! We don't want to hear you. Shut up, Robert! Shut up!
You don't want to hear me, then. You'll listen to Rouse and to that old man Thomas, but not to me. You'll listen to Sim Harness of the Union that's treated you so fair. Maybe you'll listen to those men from London. Am I a liar? A coward? A traitor? Is there a man of you that has given up £800 since this trouble here began? How much has Thomas given up? £10 or five or what? You listen to him, and what had he to say? None can pretend, he said, that I am not a believer in principle. But when nature says no further, is going against nature. I tell you, if a man cannot say to nature, budge me from this if you can, then his principles are but his belly. Give in, says Thomas. Go down on your knees and throw up your foolish fight. And perhaps, he said, perhaps your enemy will chuck you down a crust.
Never!
Yes?
I never said that.
If you did not say it, man, you meant it. And what did you say about the chapel? Chapel's against it, you said. She's against it. Well, if chapel and nature go hand in hand, it's the first I've ever heard of it. That young man there, George Rouse, said I had hell fire on my tongue. If I had, I would use it all to scorch and wither this talking of surrender. Surrendering's the work of cowards and
people.
Stop there, George Rouse. It's no time to settle personal matters. But there was one other who spoke to you, Mr. Simon Harness. We have not much to thank Mr. Harness and the Union for. They said to us, desert your mates or we'll desert you. And they did desert us.
Yes, they did.
Mr. Simon Harness is a clever man, but he has come too late. For all that Mr. Simon Harness says, for all that Thomas and Rouse, and for all that any man present here can say, we've won the fight. You've forgotten what that fight has been. the fight of those that spend themselves with every blow they strike and every breath they draw against a thing that fattens on them and grows with the law of merciful nature. That thing is capital. It is a thing that will take as much and give you as little as it can. That's capital. A thing that will say, I am very sorry for you poor fellows, but I will not give one sixpence of its dividends to help you. That's capital. A white-faced, stony-hearted monster. You've got it on its knees. Are you to give up at the last minute to save your miserable body's pain? When I went this morning to see those old men from London, I looked into their very hearts. I saw they were afraid. All but one of them's afraid. And I ask you, men, give me a free hand to tell them, go back to London. The men have nothing for you. Give me that. Give me that, and I swear to you, within a week, you shall have from London all you want. Tis not for this little moment of time we are fighting. Not for ourselves, our own little bodies and their wants. Till for all those that come after, throughout all time. Oh, men, for the love of them, don't roll up another stone upon their heads. Don't help to blacken the sky and let the bitter sea in over them. They're welcome for the worst that can happen to me, for the worst that can happen to us all. Aren't they? Aren't they? If we can shake that white-faced monster with the bloody lips that has sucked the life out of ourselves, our wives, our children since the world began, if we've not the hearts of men to stand against it, breast to breast and eye to eye, and force it backward till it cries for mercy, he will go on sucking life, and we shall stay forever what we are. Less than the dogs.
There is a slight movement in the crowd, and Madge stops by the platform,
nature
looking up at Thomas.
Nature says that old man, Thomas, give in to nature. I tell you, strike your blow in nature's face, and let it do its worst.
David Roberts! Your wife is dying.
I say to you, answer them,
Robert.
Answer them,
Robert. Don't you hear, Madge? Hey, what is it?
Your wife, man.
Let Robert through, men. Let him through.
We needn't have hurried. Annie Roberts is dead. Oh, you pack of blinded hounds. How many more women are you going to let die?
It's not us that's blind, it's Robert. How long will you put up with him? Get in the truck.
Kick a man that's down by Dab. What brought him down then but his own black obstinacy?
He's lost his wife.
And who's forced that but his own? Have done with him, I say, before he's killed your own wives and mothers.
Come here.
We'll make terms with
him. We've had enough of him. Too bad.
In the Underwood drawing room, Enid is sitting on the sofa, Edgar by a little spindle-legged table in the center of the room. His eyes are fixed on the double doors that lead into the dining room.
Just on five. They're all in there waiting. Father in his room.
Yes, he is. I went to see Robert this afternoon, Ted.
That wasn't very wise.
Oh, Ted, Robert ought to give way.
There's a lot to be said on the men's side.
I don't feel half as sympathetic with them as I did before I went. They're just set up cross-beaming against you. But I do hope Dad will make concessions.
He won't. It's a sort of religion with him. Curse it, I know what's coming. He'll be voted down.
Oh, they wouldn't dare.
They will. They're in a funk.
Oh, but can't you see, Ted? Father would never get over it. You must stop them somehow.
Against my convictions. Against yours.
Your first duty is to save Father.
I wonder.
And yes, it's the only interest he's got left. It'll be like a death blow to him.
I know.
Promise.
I'll do what I can.
First five. You'll never get through.
have to eat another dinner at that hotel.
You've been seeing Roberts, I hear.
Yes, Father.
You know what playing to bridge such a gulf as this is like?
Well, I thought I had to do something.
You think that with your gloved hands you can cure the trouble of a century?
But, Father, I'm only thinking of you.
I can take care of myself, my dear.
Have you thought what will happen if you're beaten in there?
I don't mean to be.
Oh, Father, don't give them a chance. You're not well. Need you go to the meeting at all?
Cut and run?
But they'll outvote you.
We shall see.
When get dinner on this 6:30 train, Ab?
No, sir, I believe not, sir.
Well, I shall speak out. I've had enough of this.
What?
Yes, ma'am? You rang?
Yes. When the men come, Cross, please show them in here.
Yes, ma'am. Excuse me, ma'am, but Mr. Anthony's had nothing but two whiskies and sodas, ma'am.
Oh, you oughtn't to have let him have those.
Well, Mr. Anthony's a little difficult man. He will have his own way.
Oh, I suppose we all want that.
Yes, ma'am. If he's crossed, it makes him violent. Being with Mr. Anthony, as you know, ma'am, ever since I was 15, it worries me to see him crossed like this at his age.
You know that man, Robert Frost?
Yes, ma'am. Well, that is to say, not to speak to, but to look at him. You can tell what he's like.
Yes?
He's violent. Got a fire inside him. What I call personal.
I think that's what my father feels about Roberts.
No, it's a regular, right-down struggle between the two. I've no patience with this Roberts. From what I hear, he's just an ordinary working man like the rest of them. They're the kind of man that never forgives the world because he wasn't born a gentleman. What I say
is... Yes, yes, I know, Frost, of course. Will you please go in and ask them if they'll have some tea? Say that I sent you.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't agree with you.
We've had this over a dozen times.
Well, what's the proposition?
Yes, what did your father say?
See? Not to me. What I understand the chairman say is this.
Miss Thomas, ma'am.
Thomas? Oh, show her in here, Ellen.
This way, please.
Come in. What is it?
Annie Roberts is dead.
Oh. But it's only a little more than an hour since I saw her.
A cold and hunger.
Oh, that's not true. Poor thing, Todd. What makes you look at me like that?
I thought you'd like to know.
Oh, it's so unjust.
I saw her die. Her hands were blue with the cold.
Oh, why wouldn't she let me help her? It's such senseless pride.
Well, pride's better than nothing to keep your body warm.
I won't talk with you. How can you tell what I feel? You don't understand and you don't want to. Please go away.
You've killed her for all your soft words, you and your father.
Oh, that's wicked. My father is suffering himself through this wretched strike.
Then tell him Mrs. Roberts is dead. That'll make him feel better.
Oh, please, go away.
I've given you the message.
What is it, Dad? What is it, Edgar?
That fellow Wilder. He was downright insulting.
What did he say?
He said father was too old and feeble to know what he was doing.
Oh.
I don't like the look of this, Wanklin.
Come. Chairman, Wilder sends you his apologies.
I withdraw my words, sir. I am sorry.
Then you haven't come to a decision, Mr. Wanklin?
No, Miss Underwood. Oh. Well, we're all here, Chairman. What do you say? Shall we get on with the business?
Yes, let's get on.
Come, Edgar. I'd like to speak with you a moment.
Really, Chairman, if this strike's not to be brought to an end before the general meeting... The shareholders will certainly haul us over the coals.
Let them.
And get turned out.
We owe it to other employers to stand firm.
There's a limit to that.
You were all full of fight at the start.
We thought the men would give in, but they haven't.
They will.
I can't have my reputation as a man of business destroyed for the satisfaction of starving the men out. I can't have it.
Come, Chairman. We're not free agents. We're part of a machine. We must bring this strike to an end on the best terms we can make.
No.
It's a deadlock, then. Now I shall never get off to Spain.
You hear the consequences of your victory, Chairman.
My wife's ill.
God bless me, you don't say so.
If I don't get her out of this cold, I won't answer for the consequences.
Have you heard this, Father?
Mrs. Roberts is dead. Enid saw her this afternoon. She had no colds or food or anything.
You don't suggest that we could have helped the poor thing. Nobody can say that there's any responsibility on us.
I say we are responsible.
War is war.
Not on women.
It not infrequently happens that women are the greatest sufferers.
If we knew that, all the more responsibility rests on us.
This is no matter for amateurs.
Call me what you like, sir. We had no right to carry things to such a length.
I don't like this business a bit. I wash my hands of it.
Ah, you can't.
None of us can.
But I protest against this.
Protest as you like, Mr. Scantlebury. It won't alter facts.
That's enough.
No, Father. If we pretend the men are not suffering, it's humbug. And if they're suffering, the women are suffering more. And as to the children, it's damnable. I don't care so much about the men, but I'd sooner resign my position on the board than go on starving women in this way.
I don't like the way you're putting it, young sir.
You're rather overshooting the mark.
I should think so, indeed.
Oh, it's no use blinking things. If you want to have the death of women on your hands, I don't.
On our hands? Not on mine. I won't have it.
We are 5 members of this board. If we were 4 against it, why did we let it drift till it came to this? You know perfectly well why. Because we hope we should starve the men out. Well, all we've done is starve 1 woman out.
I protest. I'm a humane man. We're all humane men.
I foresaw this.
Then why didn't you put your foot down?
How much good that would have done.
Well, for all we can tell, there may be 12 other starving women.
For God's sake, sir, don't use that word at a board meeting. It's monstrous.
I will use it, Mr. Scantlebury.
Then I will not listen to you. I shall not listen.
None of us are opposed to a settlement except your father. I don't think because a woman happens to have a weak heart.
If it hadn't been for this cutthroat policy, she needn't have died like this. I don't defend the men or myself or anybody.
You may have to. A coroner's jury of disinterested sympathizers may say some very nasty things.
Coroner's jury? No, it's not a case for that.
I've had enough of cowardice.
Cowardice is an unpleasant word, Mr. Edgar Anthony. It will look very like cowardice if we suddenly concede the men's demands when a thing like this happens. We must be careful.
Of course we must. The proper course is to put the whole thing into the hands of Harness to settle for them.
Exactly. And as to you, young sir, I can't sufficiently express my distaste for the way you've treated the whole matter. You ought to withdraw. I pay no attention to what young Mr. Anthony has said. Coroner's jury! The idea's preposterous. I move this amendment to the chairman's motion. Let the dispute be placed at once in the hands of Mr. Simon Harness for settlement. On the lines indicated by him this morning. Anyone second that?
I do.
Very well, then. I ask the chairman to put it to the board.
We have been made the subject of an attack. I take it on my shoulders. I am 76 years old. I have been chairman of this company since its inception 230 years ago. I have had to do with men for 50 years, I have fought the men of this company 4 times. 4 times, I've beaten them. It has been said that I am not the man I was. However that may be, I'm man enough to stand by my guns. The men have been treated justly. They have had fair wages. We have always been ready to listen to their complaints. It has been said that times have changed. If they have, I have not changed with them. Neither will I. It has been said that masters and men are equal. Can't. There can only be 1 master in a house. Where 2 men meet, the better man will rule. It has been said that capital and labor have the same interest. Can't. Their interests are as wide asunder as the poles. It has been said that the board is only part of a machine. Can't. We are the machine. It brains on sinews. It is for us to lead and to determine what is to be done and to do it without fear or favor. Fear of the men. Fear of the shareholders. Fear of our own shadows. Before I am like that, I hope to die. There's only 1 way of treating men with the iron hand. This half and half business, the half and half manners of this generation has brought all this upon us. You can't eat, take, and have it. Yield 1 demand, and they will make it 6. They are like Oliver Twist asking for more. If I were in their place, I should do the same. But I am not in their place. I have been accused of being a domineering tyrant, thinking only of my pride. I'm thinking of the future of this country, threatened with the black waters of confusion, threatened with mob government, threatened with... What I cannot see. If by any conduct of mine I have to bring this on us, I shall be ashamed to look my fellows in the face.
Antony stares before him at what he cannot see, and there is perfect stillness. Frost comes in from the hall.
The men are here, sir. Shall I bring them in, sir?
Wait.
Yes, sir.
I come to the attack that has been made upon me. A woman has died. I am told that her blood is on my hands.
I said on our hands.
It is the same. I'm not aware that if my adversary suffer in a fair fight not sought by me, it is my fault. I cannot separate, as I would, these men from their women and children. A fair fight. It's a fair fight.
But is it a fair fight, Father? Look at them and look at us. They've only this one weapon.
And your weak need enough to teach them how to use it. It seems the fashion nowadays for men to take their enemy's side. I have not learnt that art. Is it my fault that they quarrel with their union too?
There is such a thing as mercy.
And justice comes before it.
What seems just to one man, sir, is injustice to another.
You accuse me of injustice, of what amounts to inhumanity, of cruelty?
Oh, come, Chairman.
These are the words of my own son. They're the words of a generation I don't understand. The words of a soft breeding.
I said it of myself too, Father.
Before I put this amendment to the board, I have one word to say. If it is carried, it means that we shall fail in what we have set ourselves to do. It means that we shall fail in the duty we owe to all capital. It means that we shall fail in the duty we owe ourselves. Be under no misapprehension. From this time, and you will never make us stand again. That is the lot you wish for. You will vote for this amendment.
He looks again from face to face, finally resting his gaze on Edgar. All sit with their eyes on the ground. Antony makes a gesture, and Tench hands in the book. He reads.
Moved by Mr. Scantlebury and seconded by Mr. Wanklin, that the men demands be placed at once in the hands of Mr. Simon Harness for settlement on the lines indicated by him this morning. Those in favor, signify in the usual way.
For a minute, no one moves. Then hastily, just as Antony is about to speak, Wilder's hand and Wanklin's are held up. Then Scantlebury's, and last Edgar's, who does not lift his head.
Contrary.
Antony lifts his own hand.
The amendment is carried. I resign my position on this board. 2 years. You have disgraced me, gentlemen. Bring in the men.
Will you come in, please?
Well, Thomas, how's it to be? What's the result of your meeting?
Sim Harness is our answer. He'll speak for us.
Is that so, Thomas?
Yes, Roberts will not be coming. His wife is dead.
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Harness, sir.
Good evening, gentlemen.
We've been waiting for you, Harness. Hope we shall come to some...
Robert! Mr. Antony, I'm afraid I am a little late. I would have been here in time, but for something that has happened. Has anything been said, man? No, but, man, what made you come? Mr. Antony, you told us this morning, gentlemen, to go away and reconsider our position. We have reconsidered it, and we are here to bring you the man's answer. Go back to London. We have nothing for you. By not one jot or tittle do we abate our demands. Or will we until the whole of these demands are yielded?
Roberts.
Is that clear enough for you, Mr. Antony? Is it short enough and to the point? You made a mistake to think we would come to heel. You may break the body, but you cannot break the spirit. Go back to London. The men have nothing for you.
We're all sorry for you, Roberts, but...
You keep your sorrow, young man. Let your father speak.
Roberts.
Well, why don't you answer, Mr. Antony?
Roberts.
Well, what is it?
You're talking without the book. Things have traveled past you. Look at this man. Read it. Demands conceded, with the exception of those relating to the engineers and furnace men. Double wages for Saturdays overtime. Night shifts as they are. These terms have been agreed. The men go back to work again tomorrow. The strike is at an end.
So, you have gone back on me. I stood by you to the death. You waited for that. Me over.
It's a lie.
We were past endurance.
Hey, listen to me.
Hold your jaw. You waited for that.
That's enough, men. You'd better go.
But, Mr. Antony, you have not signed those terms. They can't make terms without their chairman. You would never sign those terms. Don't tell me that you have, for the love of God. I reckoned on you.
The board has signed.
Then you are no longer chairman of this company. They've thrown you over. Thrown over their chairman. They've done us both down, Mr. Antony.
Both. Broken men, my friend Robert.
For shame, Roberts. Go home quietly, man. Go home.
Home? Home.
Come away, Father dear. Come to your room.
Antony rises with an effort. He turns to Roberts, who looks at him. They stand several seconds gazing at each other fixedly. The expression of Roberts' face changes from hostility to wonder. Antony turns suddenly. He sways as though about to fall. And is assisted out by Edgar and Enid. Roberts remains motionless for several seconds, staring intently after Antony, goes out into the hall.
It's a great weight off my mind, Mr. Harness. But what a painful scene. It's all been so violent.
A woman dead, and the two best men both broken.
You know, sir, these terms, they're the very same we drew up together, you and I, and put to both sides before the fight began. All this, and what for?
That's where the fun comes in.
You have just heard Strife by John Galsworthy, adapted and directed by Charles Warburton. The Great Plays series is a public service of the National Broadcasting Company. A drama guide giving complete background material for the Great Plays by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience at the cost of 25 cents. Send coin or money orders to Columbia University Press in care of Great Plays, Columbia University Press, New York City. Consult your local library for reading material on the remaining Great Plays of the series. Next week, at this same hour, William by Molnar will be presented. Those taking part in Strife today were as John Antony, Conway Wingfield, Edgar Antony, Horace Braham, Frederick Wilder, Dennis Hoey, William Scantlebury, Eustace Wyatt, Oliver Wanklin, Roland Bottomley, Tench, J.P. Wilson, Underwood, Burford Hamden, Simon Harness, Morris Karnofsky, David Roberts, Louis Hector, James Green, Henry Herbert, Henry Thomas, William Podmore, George Rouse, Peter Donnell, Frost, Harold DeBecker, Enid Underwood, played by Irene Wicker, Mary Michael as Annie Roberts, Barbara Lee as Madge Thomas, Alice Cooper Cliff as Mrs. Rouse, Lillian Tong as Mrs. Yale, and Kingsley Colton as the boy. The orchestra was under the direction of Joseph Honte. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.